And it may well be that sort of the system will work in a way that would trigger trigger launch of actual nuclear missiles. So that's kind of, again, this is just one hypothetical scenario, but it just sort of illustrates that things are getting more and more complex, and it's there are a number of those links is getting really high. Now I will bundle your second part of your question with this other questions about the who is making the decisions. That's actually a very important part. Sort of who decides whether you could tolerate the cost and let me step back to the nuclear power and nuclear industry. I think one of the reasons that sort of we see that. We decided that we can tolerate the cost because there is a difference between people who bear the cost and people who benefit from nuclear power, and so that has something to do with this kind of the way these decisions are made. And effectively, with nuclear weapons, yes, you could see most decisions were made by nuclear weapon states. They decided to build nuclear arsenals. They decided to operate their nuclear weapons in a certain way, and they sort of assumed that they have the power to make that decisions, and they did have the power to make that decisions. This is about power. So what we see now is to some extent in the NPT review process through various initiatives, like de-alerting, the disarmament itself. These initiatives sort of they try to wrangle power out of the nuclear weapon states, and it's a difficult process. And I think what we have seen with the with the humanitarian initiative and what we see now with the nuclear ban negotiations is exactly that non-nuclear weapon states, or at least those who kind of feel that they care about this issue strongly, they try to assert their right to make these decisions, and they assert their right to make to be there among those who decide whether we can or cannot tolerate the cost. And the cost, whether the cost would be kind of a high enough to justify this, I think when we're talking about nuclear accidents, the cost could be very high. I think, was it FAS or NRDC, or was it a joint study that was done a while ago? Just a one submarine, one U.S. submarine unloading its weapons would result, tens of millions people dead just from that attack, and that's just one submarine. So it's not like with enough troubles you should look it up. There was this book from the Reagan years, sort of about that the dirt that does it, sort of with enough shovels you could survive a nuclear war. No, that's not going to happen. So that's so in that sense, I think exactly the point is that the process that we see today is sort of one way of struggling with this issue and one way of actually trying to say that, well, there are great costs of operating nuclear weapons, and there is a reason to bring this cost under control and eliminate it. And the way to do that is probably to eliminate nuclear weapons entirely.
I know that there are two other panelists who want to speak on the questions, and we'll make sure we answer all of them. Hans, please go ahead.
The question from Australia there about changes or comparisons with the Cold War in terms of how to deal with the multitude of scenarios and multiplicity of adversaries, if you will. It was very quick, as a matter of fact. Immediately after the end of the Cold War, because of the shock, I guess, over the question of Iraq's WMD program. That one of the things I spent a lot of time on at the time was to track basically the way military officials responded to it and translated that reaction into changes in military strategy and doctrine. And what was striking to see was how quickly sort of the landscape just changed in, you know, just words that were used. Instead of having to deter nuclear, it was deterring WMD. And in the public, it didn't mean that much, I guess, but to warfighters, it meant a lot. It meant, whoa, now we have to put X's on the map for chemical, biological as well, not just in the context of US-Soviet, as we had done in the past, or just China, but in the context of any WMD-owning country that was out there. So suddenly you saw a spread of potential scenarios in which nuclear weapons were envisioned in terms of planning. They could come to use. So that opened up pathways for potential, you know, involvement of nuclear weapons in scenarios and crises around the world in a way that was not the case in that way during the Cold War. So I think that was a sort of an immediate effect of it. It became more complex, but it was not, those were not threats that threatened the existential survival of the state.